The Court of Appeals of Minnesota is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Johnson, and Judge Reyes, the Honorable Judge Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this online panel of the Minnesota Court of Appeals for this April 23, 2024 hearing. Counsel, I'll just spend a couple of seconds to go over our rules, with which you're probably familiar, but for the sake of the record, I will do so. I'll ask each of you to state your name as you present your arguments. Each side will have 15 minutes with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel to use for rebuttal if you'd like to. We do, obviously, we can see each other on the screen. However, we're only keeping an audio recording of the presentation, so it's important for you to state your name as you commence each leg of your argument. The only recording that is allowed is the audible one that we are making, and so no video recording is permitted. Please bear that in mind. Be mindful of the timing restrictions. And counsel, whenever you are ready to proceed, for appellant, you have the floor.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Alex Reichert, and I am the attorney for Alan Baer, the defendant in this action and the appellant now before the court. As an initial matter, let me just address the main issue here, and that is the fact that legislatures do not do superfluous acts. They don't pass laws with no meaning. If we adopt the trial court's reasoning, there is no case that would be covered by 609.045. The reason for that is all courts have different jurisdictions. That is why we have different courts. Federal courts require different things for jurisdictions than state courts do, and the different state courts require different jurisdiction.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, is it? I mean, if there was, let's assume there's a conspiracy crime from one state to the next, and it involves communication between the two states, between parties in the two states. That would seem to be a single act that might be covered by this statute, which arguably doesn't cover, at least as the district court understood it, does not cover acts as your client engaged in, which is a violation of law on the physical ground in one state, and then and violation of a different state's law in the physical territory of the other state. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, but they would still both require jurisdiction in their state. The trial court in Minnesota would still require that at least one act happen in the state of Minnesota as an element of the offense, and the North Dakota court would require at least one act to have happened in the state of North Dakota. Same thing if we have federal court, you would need
right,
to.
But if there's, let's say there's a conspiracy and a defendant engages in a single telephone conversation in which the parties develop this conspiracy to commit whatever crime is at issue. There you would have only one act in one place by the defendant. It seems as if the statute would apply there differently from, at least arguably differently from the circumstances here, where you have physical conduct occurring in one state in violation of one state's laws and physical conduct occurring in another state, totally separate in time and in location.
And they are both what you put forward is that you are going to have one act, but if it is tried in the state of Minnesota, there is going to be a requirement that at least something happened in the state of Minnesota. In the case of if it was a North Dakota prosecution, it would require that some part of the act happen in the state of North Dakota, that there has to be a nexus, that there has to be jurisdiction. So even in that case, each court is going to require.
But I wasn't talking about jurisdiction. I was talking about actual separate behavior that's separated in time and in location.
And
you don't
and
see a distinction there?
I understand, and I think that really gets to the heart of the issue here, because the court is concentrating on jurisdiction as an element that must be considered under the Blockberger test. And in this case, and there is a case out of California where they discuss this at some length, saying jurisdiction is different than the elements of the offense when we are looking at this analysis. Because yes, we are looking at the acts. What did they do that was criminal? More than why can this court hear it? And so in this case, where we have the same crime that is occurring in two different states, all of a sudden we have this silliness where you can create two crimes with the same acts. If this person...
Let me offer a hypothetical. Let's assume, I know it didn't happen in this case because apparently your client was sentenced quite substantially in South Dakota, but let's assume it were different. Let's assume South Dakota had a relatively lenient penalty for fleeing a police officer, and Minnesota had a more severe, a defendant would face a more severe penalty. It seemed to me then that a flight in Minnesota, let's assume that an individual is fleeing from police in Minnesota, it would be in that driver's best interest under your theory to quickly get to South Dakota as fast as, if you can outrun the police to South Dakota, boom, he gets the lenient penalties in South Dakota and escapes completely any prosecution in Minnesota. Gets a lenient penalty in South Dakota and escapes completely penalty in Minnesota. Wouldn't that be the case?
If that's what we're saying, yes, it would be. And you would have the same argument if somebody in, and it's North Dakota, but if somebody was in North Dakota and they had a bag of marijuana in their car, and where it is illegal in the state of North Dakota, and they're 30 feet from the bridge in downtown Grand Forks, and they see a cop and they run across the Sorley Bridge into East Grand Forks to get into Minnesota, and they get there and no crime is committed in Minnesota. Well, obviously he's committed a crime in North Dakota. He can be brought back and he can be charged with that crime. But yes, that certainly is an argument. And that argument has existed forever. When I argued United States versus Lara before the United States Supreme Court, the federal court said, well, in a tribal case, somebody could simply plead guilty to a misdemeanor because there was no felony murder. So they could plead guilty to a misdemeanor in tribal court and then go to federal court and not be able to be charged under the Major Crimes Act. But that's what you also have to assume there under your scenario is that state prosecutors don't talk. I can tell you that border prosecutors talk every day. They talk all the time about their cases. This is not something that is likely going to occur, that somebody is going to jump into one court, plead guilty immediately to create a double jeopardy situation so that they can't be prosecuted in another state.
And so, counsel?
Yes.
I wanted to go back to your comment about jurisdiction. You argue that jurisdiction is different. Would you agree that venue is an element of any offense charged in the state of Minnesota as well as North Dakota?
Yes, it is and it is a requirement in order to bring the case forward. But it isn't an element in the way that we think of all other elements, because there is a jurisdiction element. That is the same in both offenses. Both offenses have a jurisdictional element. And
well, I see the jurisdiction as separate from venue. So in criminal prosecution, one of the elements that the state has to prove is that the crime occurred within a certain venue. So for example, let's assume we're in Ramsey County, and Ramsey County prosecutor wants to bring a case and they want to charge me with driving over the speed limit. They have to show that, prove all the elements of speeding, but then they also have to prove that my speeding occurred in the county of Ramsey in Minnesota, correct?
Correct.
So that venue element is one of the facts that have to be proved. One of the elements that have to be proved. Under 609.045, the elements of both law and fact have to be identical. Here, the act that occurred of fleeing an officer, That had, in order for Minnesota to charge that had to occur in Minnesota then, right? So that is different than fleeing a police officer in North Dakota.
Yes, you're right. The venue element is different. And that's why I started off with saying legislatures don't do superfluous acts. They don't pass a law for no reason. If they clearly meant for there not to be the dual sovereigns argument in cases between two states, and in your example, and you are correct, in every single case where there is something that happens in two states, you are going to have that venue element. But the legislature would not have passed this law if that's what they had intended, because that would never, there is no case where that could happen. And
Yes,
so,
but let me stop you there, because under 609.045, it says, there's an exception unless the elements of both law and fact are identical. If Minnesota wants to prosecute somebody for fleeing a police officer for acts that occurred in Minnesota and meet the venue element, that means that those elements are not identical to a charge that is brought in North Dakota for acts that occurred there. For fleeing a police officer in North Dakota, then. So, therefore, 609.045 doesn't apply in this situation, correct?
no, because 609.04 does apply. 609.045 does apply because the legislature clearly intended for there to be a bar to prosecution for the same offense in two different states.
Well,
Now, if there.
and that's where, let me stop you there, counsel. You keep referring to it as the same offense, but there's one offense that occurred in Minnesota of fleeing an officer in Minnesota, and then there's a separate offense of fleeing off the office an officer in North Dakota. Those are separate acts.
And that's where we disagree. They are not separate acts. If I drove from downtown Minneapolis across the Mississippi over to the University of Minnesota with a police officer chasing me, and back over another bridge back into downtown Minneapolis, which is exactly what happened in this case, I have only committed one offense. The fact that the two bridges that my client crossed were a state border should not change that. And the legislature had that in mind when they passed this law. It's clear that that's what they intended. Now, had he gone over, lost the police officers in North Dakota, messed around in Minnesota for a while, been seen again in Minnesota, started a new pursuit, done something completely different, then I think we would have a different situation. But we don't. We have one continuous fleeing from a police officer, just like if it had been in one county or one state or one city. But just because we cross two bridges, the legislature has said that should not be two separate crimes. That should be one crime. And it makes sense. It makes sense that if we have the same witnesses, the same officers, the same body cameras, the same in-car videos, everything is the same, except for this jurisdictional element, except for where it happened. If in every other situation, this would be one crime. But because it crossed a state line, for some reason, we have now committed two crimes.
But Mr. Reichert, isn't it? It seems like so. In the first line of the statute, we have the words "in this state." If an act or omission in this state constitutes a crime under both the laws of this state and some other jurisdiction, I mean, if those words were not in the statute, I think your argument would have more force. But an act or omission in this state necessarily excludes, does it not, the act that occurred in North Dakota?
We can, I don't think it does, because again, we have the same crime. This crime is being committed over a range.
Well, I mean, I mean, this is a matter of statutory. We're applying a statute. We're not applying, well, anyway, but the statute has that limitation or that modifier about act and act in this state. And therefore, it seems like the legislature intended to focus on not just, you know, what the conduct is, but also the location of the conduct when defining the thing at issue.
And if we think about it, would we allow a prosecution to charge a fleeing a police officer case every 30 seconds to give him another crime? So you drive for 30 seconds, that's one crime of fleeing a police officer. You haven't stopped, you go for another 30 seconds, that's another crime. You go for another 30 seconds, that's another crime. That's not, we would never allow that to stand.
I assume your argument would be different if instead of a fleeing charge, there were 15 or 20 stop sign violations charged in South Dakota, and then the same number of stop sign violations in Minnesota after the over the bridge continuation occurred.
Absolutely. And my client did plead to a bunch of traffic offenses because he did, and we're not arguing those things. And if he had failed to signal a turn in Minnesota, we would not have an argument that because he failed to signal a turn in North Dakota, that somehow bars this one, because it's not a continuous act. Again, it's like I said, if he had stopped, gotten away, the police decided to break off the pursuit, something like that, and then there was a new fleeing a police officer, we would be talking about something different. And if we look at it, possession of drugs, if a person walks from Grand Forks to East Grand Forks with an ounce of methamphetamine, clearly they have committed an offense in Minnesota and North Dakota. And we're going to have the same issue here. The only difference between those two offenses is going to be jurisdiction, whether it happened in East Grand Forks or whether it happened in Grand Forks. Again, that's one continuous offense, just like this is one continuous offense. No one is ever charged with 25 counts of fleeing a police officer if they go 1 mile while trying to flee from the same police officer. So now the only difference here is that they passed over two bridges, one going into Minnesota, one leaving Minnesota. And the sorry, I see my time is up.
Yeah, thank you. Your time has expired, but you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you'd like to use that time for to continue your argument or to respond to the state. And so thank you. And we'll turn to the state now for the state's position.
Your Honor, may it please the court. I'm Tanner Hermanson, Assistant Polk County Attorney, representing respondent, State of Minnesota and Polk County in this matter. I've previously submitted a written submission that addresses both the threshold issue on 609.045's application, as well as my response to appellant's argument that the district court's ruling renders the statute obsolete. I would largely rest on the written submission. However, I will highlight some of the arguments therein. Turning first to appellant's claim that the district court's ruling and order here renders the statute obsolete, as the court has already noted in some of its questions, I would contend that there are situations where the statute would still apply, even if it is somewhat narrow, given the district court's ruling, specifically in the cases of conspiracy crimes, crimes where there's concurrent state and federal jurisdiction, or other situations where there may be jurisdiction between two different states, but the entire facts are the same. And I would note that counsel has addressed jurisdiction, which I believe is distinct from venue as an element of the offense.
Well, give us an example of a non-conspiracy crime that would not apply, where the statute would apply.
So if you consider, let's say we have a supposed defendant residing in Grand Forks, North Dakota, who is subject of a harassment restraining order that prohibits him from having contact with a protected party who is located in East Grand Forks, Minnesota. And the defendant then sends a number of text messages over to the protected party in East Grand Forks. By the virtue of there being that harassment restraining order and the locations of both the defendant and the protected party, there's arguments that both states could have jurisdiction over prosecuting that offense. However, given the nature of the elements on that offense, I do believe that 609.045 could apply depending
so
on the facts.
Is it only then conspiracy and other offenses that involve communication, such as harassment restraining order or a plan to commit a crime in another state or in Minnesota where the communication goes across state lines? Are those the only examples?
It is the common thread upon the examples I've provided. Off the top of my head, I cannot come up with an example that would be non-communication based where 609.045 would apply absent a.
I mean, it seems like a very narrow band of cases, and why wouldn't the legislature then have just made a declaration that those types of cases are what the courts accepting, if that's the only cases that wouldn't apply?
Well, in relation to separate state jurisdictions, the communication element is a common thread. However, when you look at the concurrent state and federal jurisdiction, you wouldn't necessarily have those same communication similarities. If you were to consider like a drug case that could apply both state and federal charges, there wouldn't necessarily have to be a communication aspect for those concurrent prosecutions.
So you think the statute was mainly aimed at concurrent federal and state and not state to state?
I don't know that I am familiar enough with the legislature's intent to say specifically whether it intended to be narrow specifically towards the federal and state.
But that would be the result, wouldn't it? Under your interpretation?
Well, the result would be both those communication threads between interstates and then the federal and concurrent state jurisdiction.
Right, but under your interpretation, it would be an extremely narrow set of circumstances where in state to state, where the statute would apply, but a broad, pretty extensive set of circumstances where the federal and state concurrent jurisdiction issue would implicate the statute. Yes?
Yes, that would be correct, that it would be narrow state to state. And I believe that was intentional as outlined in State v. Ahn. The court did look at the difference between 609.035 versus 609.045 and how they were enacted at the same time, the differences in their language. And a lot of appellant's argument here seems very similar to arguments that would be presented under a 609.035 situation if the conduct had all happened within the state of Minnesota.
And just to be clear, so under 609.045, it does reference the fact that if it's a crime under the laws of this state, i.e. Minnesota, and the laws of another jurisdiction. So while most of the case law seems to talk about state and federal concurrent jurisdiction, the wording of the statute would apply to another jurisdiction, such as another state, then, correct?
That's correct.
But just so I'm correct, I understand it. You are acknowledging that you can't think of anything other than a communicative crime where a state-to-state prosecution would be barred under the statute.
As I said here today, that's correct. I don't know that one doesn't exist. However, Your Honor, I don't have one to present to the court at this time. So then lastly, I want to highlight one last time, as appellant has addressed a number of times about how his client has crossed two bridges and how that we're somehow treating that different here because it crossed state lines versus if it happened down in the cities or even within the same county. And I again want to highlight back to the difference in language between 609.035 and 609.045 and how 045 has been written more broadly without the same language in 035 that I think arguably could have applied if 035 didn't specifically state that it had to be within the state of Minnesota. And with that, Your Honor, I'm open to more additional questions, but I don't feel I have anything more specific to highlight for the court at this time.
It does not appear as if any other panel members have any additional questions, so thank you. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Alex Reichert again for the appellant and defendant, Mr. Baer. So I just want to go quickly to the example that Mr. Hermanson gave. And this, that is the exact same situation, that if we went with the trial court's ruling, that statute would have the exact same problem, that prosecution would have the exact same problem here. In North Dakota, they would have to prove that something happened in North Dakota. In Minnesota, they would have to prove that something happened in Minnesota. So we have the exact same problem that we have here. There is no case, whether it's conspiracy, you have to prove that some part of the conspiracy happened in North Dakota, and you have to prove that some part of the conspiracy happened in Minnesota. There is no difference between the case that he gave and the case that we have now before the court. So if we go with the trial court's analysis, there
except
are
for,
no...
Again, except for a single act of one person communicating by email or phone from Minnesota into South Dakota. But here you've got the physical act of accelerating a car in one state, turning corners in one state, physically operating a vehicle in two different states. You don't see that as material.
I don't. And let me just, for two reasons. The first being, again, even a single act that happens from Bemidji to St. Paul could never be charged in South Dakota or North Dakota. The only way that that can be charged is to go to another state. And whenever that is prosecuted in another state, it is going to have a nexus to that state as an element of the offense, as it would have to have an element of the offense in the state of Minnesota. So
how much of a break do you need in the chase? Let's say there's a pursuit across the bridge, and how much is it in terms of time or circumstances, what's the minimal amount of break in the activity where you would say the statute, you would acknowledge the statute does not apply?
Difficult questions, and the same question would be if it was an in-state only offense, you know, if somebody's driving, the police drop off the chase and then come back. I think it's not so much about time, but about the facts of what happened. Why was, did the chase stop because he lost them and he couldn't find them anymore? Did the chase end because he said, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore, and the police officer backs off? Is it because the person stopped? I don't know that time is as necessary. It could be a very short period of time if somebody stops and then restarts, or it could be a longer period of time.
Can you help me with the facts of this case? And I'm sorry, I'm not aware. Did the South Dakota officers continue their pursuit into Minnesota, and then they stayed until the actual apprehension in South Dakota?
Yeah, it's North Dakota. But
North Dakota, I'm sorry.
That's okay. So they went from downtown North Dakota across the bridge into downtown Minnesota, back into, and the Grand Forks, North Dakota officers continued the chase the entire way into Minnesota and back into North Dakota. And the Minnesota officers continued the chase through, they started when it got to Minnesota and they continued it all the way through Minnesota and back into North Dakota. So the officers are exactly the same. Now, to the Ani case, which I think is critical, every single case that they've cited is state and federal, not state and state. And that is a huge distinction. But Ani showed that it was two completely different crimes. It was selling of stolen property in the state and dealing in firearms in federal court. Two completely different crimes. As we said, in all the stop sign violations, if he had hit a car when he was there, if he had run somebody over in Minnesota, those would all be different crimes, and he could be charged with each of those. The North Dakota crime of fleeing a police officer would not have barred any of those. It would only bar the one continuous crime that was happening throughout this entire thing. And that's shown by the fact that he pled to many different crimes in North Dakota that he didn't plead to in Minnesota. So it is just because we have a continuous crime, like fleeing a police officer, like possession of drugs, like that, and that is what the legislature intended. That's why they passed this, because the dual sovereignty, the allegiance to two kings is unfair. The state of Minnesota recognized that and passed this law because of it. If we adopt the ruling here of the court, that goes away. Thank you very much.
Judge Ross, could I ask one more question?
Oh, certainly, yes.
Mr. Reichert, would it be wrong to apply this statute only if and only when an act is committed which is simultaneously an offense in two different jurisdictions? In other words, you know, at the moment it's being done. For example, the example of a conspiracy is where, you know, the if there's discussions going on between two people in multiple states, or the your opposing counsel's example of a criminal communication, a text message between people who are in different states. You know, that might be why at the time it's occurring, at that moment, a crime in two different jurisdictions. But what we have here is, would it be wrong to interpret the statute that way? And if so, why?
Yes and no. There are obviously crimes that are more continuous in nature and more discreet in nature. Say a punch, for one, you know, one punch that becomes something. But we look at it with, as we analyze any other crime of this sort, as like I alluded to earlier, the crime of fleeing a police officer is one offense, but it could become two, whether it happens in Minnesota completely or in two different states. And we have an analysis to do that, to determine when that becomes more than one offense. But when we look at it and we say, this would never be charged as two different offenses if it had happened entirely in the state of Minnesota, boom, this statute applies and it bars it. And there are lots of different cases where that happens. Whether it be possession of drugs, whether it be possession of stolen property, whether it be a DUI. You're drunk when you leave East Grand Forks and come into North Dakota, and you can't have a DUI in both states. Because we look at it, if it's only one crime, if it had all happened in Minnesota, then it's barred. If it's two crimes, then we can look at it differently.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to both counsel. With apologies to the good people of South Dakota, I think entirely through the oral argument, I was referring to the chase being in South Dakota. But thank you for the accurate correction that this is a North Dakota, Minnesota chase. Thank you for your briefing to both counsel and for your oral arguments. Very helpful to us. We will take the matter under advisement at this time and issue an opinion within the statutory period. So thank you to both of you. And have a good afternoon.